Welcome to Paradigm Shifters, and we have one of our favorite guests on today, Linda Sherman, soothsayer at soothsayer.com, is going to talk to us about astrology and golly, about the election and golly, about a lot of the ferment and torment that's going on all over the world. What does it show in the stars, Linda? Welcome to the show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on your show, Veronica. It always is.
Well, I think I'm ready for my hair to curl, right? I remember in your books, What Next? And Fast Forward, you had us all kind of alerted to the fact that things were going to get a little bit dangerous and a little chaotic, and we should be balancing ourselves out and preparing the way, right?
Exactly. As I put it, these are very, very serious times that we are in. They're revolutionary times. And I use that term rather freely in both of my books and in my newsletter, that what I call the second American Revolution is playing out between now, basically, and the 2020s. We have to transform ourselves, the direction, our politics, our economic paradigms. As you know, revolutions and civil wars have broken out all over the world. So this is not limited just to the United States. But we can see from this particular presidential campaign that I don't think any of us alive today have ever seen anything like this.
No, did you see the debate last night?
Yes, I did.
Wow. I turned it off because I got a stomach ache partway through. Terrible, right?
Well, the level at which this discourse has descended to, beneath the sewer level of expression, as I'm fond of saying, that Donald Trump has really dragged this down. And I don't know how much further down he can go with it.
Mm-hmm. But as you mentioned in your latest newsletter, people are voting for him because they're so fed up with the deceptions that we've been living with too long, right?
Exactly, Veronica. My take on this, with the planetary configurations, are causing us to question the fundamentals of the structures of our government, of our economy, of our environmental policy, up and down the line, and it isn't coming out very well. I think it has taken a long time. It's taken between 30 to 40 years to dismantle a prosperous economy that had good public commons and services for people in order to turn ourselves into an oligarchy or a plutocracy, where most of the prosperity has gone to what we finally call the 1%. And Pluto in Capricorn is the concentration of wealth and power. Capricorn represents the traditional, the kings, the monarchs, the people in charge, the people at the top of the food chain. And Uranus right now is in Aries, which has to do with the ordinary person in the street, so to speak, the ordinary people out there that are trying to figure this out. My problem is that we, as a public here in the USA, have paid no attention all along the way. Very few. Some people have.
I know.
Most
yeah.
people have paid no attention to all the signs of how jobs have been shipped out of the country, or eliminated completely by technology, how an attitude toward employees and toward the commons has changed, the sense of entitlement of the people at the top. It goes on and on and on. The government by and for the people, we know that doesn't exist.
Really. No, and the whole thing about the banksters, as you love to call them, and
yes.
The deregulation of both media and money freak me out. That is very scary.
You're absolutely right. I've spoken many times on this show and on other shows about the removal of the Glass-Steagall Act in the 1990s. When Bill Clinton was president and the Republican Congress worked together to deregulate Wall Street under the auspices of Robert Rubin, Lawrence Summers, and Alan Greenspan.
And when you say that, does that mean that they had no stoppers in what they could charge or what they could keep concealed?
Well, they concealed a lot of things that people simply didn't pay attention to what was going on. What the Glass-Steagall Act was, which was created in the 1930s, separated regular, what we would call normal banking, which we have checking and savings accounts and we get mortgages and car loans and this sort of thing, from investment banking or speculative banking that's tied in with Wall Street. The Glass-Steagall Act separated those two different types of banks.
Okay.
Because in the 1920s, when we had the crash of 1929, it was catastrophic. Practically all the banks went under together.
Mm. Because, and people jumped out of windows, too, didn't they?
Exactly. They lost everything. And a bank, rather than remaining solvent for ordinary people, just went under because it was involved in the speculative frenzy. Hmm. So the Glass-Steagall Act was passed to separate those two kinds of banking. And in the 1990s, these guys, mainly headed up by Robert Rubin, pushed to deregulate this. And I have spoken about this many times. Brooks Lyborn, who was appointed by Bill Clinton to head up the commodities division of government, the supervision of commodities, saw what they were trying to do and said, this will crash the economy, this will wreck the banking system. And Robert Rubin got together with Congress, and they fired her. They got her out of there.
Oh, my goodness. Because they didn't like her words. They didn't like her truth, right?
Her truth, exactly. So people weren't paying attention to what she was saying or what was going on. They were flying along in the 1990s, which thrived off the dot-com things. And the spreading of the use of the internet and PCs and all of this helped to stimulate the economy. And as we all know, between 1999 and 2000, we had a big market crash again, where the dot-coms, most of them were found out to be worthless.
Oh, Lord.
And then we got into massive real estate speculation under the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction in Taurus, which rules land and real estate. So the banks started issuing subprime mortgages to people who couldn't afford them and then even realized that they were bad. So they sold them to nations like Greece, Italy, Portugal, Iceland, and Ireland, all of which went down the tubes, as you know. So those were called credit default swaps. They created a name for them. They didn't want to take the hit when they went down, so they sold them to somebody else, essentially. These things go on and on, and I've spoken about this over many years now.
But tell me, were there lawsuits made by these countries about that?
Well, yes. Yes and no. I mean, their governments bought these things and put them in their national treasury. So who are they going to sue? Iceland, by the way, is interesting. They have recovered from all of this. They put all of these people in jail, from the government and the management of the banks that went along with this craziness, and they have recovered from all of this and are running their country. By the way, most of the bankers in Iceland are women.
And also, is it a socialist country?
Well, you know, that's a generality, socialist country.
Mm-hmm.
They have successful capitalism there, just like they do in Denmark and Norway and Sweden and Finland. You could say they're socialist countries. What they have are very, very effective social programs like federal health care, absolute health care coverage for everyone, child care for everyone, good public education. And when you retire, you have public housing and everything that you go into. Now, you pay large taxes in these countries.
We pay a greater proportion than we do here.
Yes, a greater proportion than we do here. However, when you add up what we spend on health insurance and what we spend on education now, which is becoming increasingly privatized, which means that only people who can afford to send their kids to school are going to go to school. Remember the notion
of
educating the public?
Mm-hmm.
You could call that a socialist idea.
Mm-hmm.
Social Security, a socialist idea. Medicare, a socialist idea. People, that word is confused with communism and Soviet Russia and communist China and all of this. This is not communism.
Right.
These countries all have successful enterprise, small and large businesses that are successful. But they support the basic things that they feel in this country that we have the right to have across the board. So these are the things that we need to be examining. The one candidate that brought all this up was Bernie Sanders.
You notice what Trump said about him last night?
Yes, he said Bernie Sanders was right.
and he said Bernie Sanders would have won if you hadn't stolen the election, he said to Hillary.
Which, unfortunately, is probably true.
Yeah, but he also was using it as a manipulation, wasn't he?
Yes. Well, there are several things. This is how Trump is a wily devil.
Right.
There's certain things about what he said about the banks, about these terrible trade agreements in which we have lost sovereign law. All of these is partly what he says is true. The other part, he doesn't have any plans or policies except a repetition of the old lower taxes on everybody,
on everybody.
The rich. You know, this notion that if you lower taxes on companies, they'll come back here has been dispelled. It doesn't work.
Right.
Because they do not want to pay a labor force. They want to use labor in other countries that cost is a poverty wage, where there are no environmental laws for manufacturing at all, which is why China, you can't breathe the air or drink the water over there.
Right.
The situation is with corporations, giant corporations, who are allowed to do anything they want for a profit, even if they ruin the air, the water, poison the food, whatever, this kind of thing, and they go out of this country to escape any kind of taxation. They can offshore their taxes. They still, some of them do have to pay. It's not like they don't pay anything.
But Linda, isn't the obvious question, what's going to happen if you destroy the whole planet? What are these guys with bags of money going to do?
They don't care right now. They don't care because I feel that these people are living in a bubble.
Okay.
And all arrogant aristocratic rulers through the ages of various societies, from emperors to monarchs to dictators, live in a bubble that they create their own immediate environment and feel that they can justify doing anything to anybody. There's a narcissism, even I will go so far to say, and it's not true across the board about everybody. Please don't get me wrong about that. But there are so many of these people who are really sociopaths.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care. They don't see it. They won't acknowledge it, what is going on here. So this is all people are really upset. They've lost all faith in the government. They've lost faith in our system, in our institutions across the board. And instead of thinking it through about what led to this, what led up to this, what has been really going on, how did they do this, and how can we correct it, how can we undo it, they're reacting in a kind of focused rage. And so they're going to vote for somebody like Donald Trump, which is a focus for their rage.
Mm. It's just like plug your nose and jump because the rest of it doesn't make any sense.
Well, I hate to say this because there is a parallel, although it's not identical, with Germany at the end of World War I.
Mm.
The economy had crashed. They had lost a war, and they had a corrupt Republic, the Weimar Republic, which was totally corrupt and inept, ruined the country. And this made everything set up for the rise of Hitler and the Third Reich. A strong man, it says, I'm going to make Germany great again. And it's because of the Jews and the Gypsies and the non-Aryan people that we've gone down the tubes. Does this sound familiar?
Oh, a little bit. Yes, just a little bit. But the thing that bothers me is if we knew all that about the Hitler regime, why are we not able to stop this part?
Well, history has a way of repeating itself.
Gall darn it.
And I don't think people look back on that and learn lessons from history, that we could fall prey to the same kind of human madness that went on in Germany and elsewhere and other nations at the beginning of World War II, that no, this can't happen to us. But it's a combination. You know, one of the things that sounds like a small thing, and to me it's a big thing, is that civics has been taken out of most school systems today. Civics, political science, and even history has been minimalized. And what is in its place is just math and science, because this is where the jobs are. And to educate you to be a critical thinker and an excellent citizen and a student of democracy and an aware person about your life, most of those things have been removed from our commons, from our public schools. In fact, Sandra Day O'Connor and Richard Dreyfuss for a number of years have been touring the country together trying to get civics back into the classroom, like it was when I was in school. We even had to take both a state and a federal constitution test when I was a junior in high school in order to get into the senior class.
Wow.
And we had civics all, and when I was in junior high, we had debates. We read the papers. Candidates that were running, we had to stand up and debate what the issues were at that time. When I was in ninth grade, we were doing this. And the contrast between the ignorance of people about what goes on in the government and who's doing what is monumental. And we have mass media, but the media is busy being infotainment all the time and reality TV, another reason why Trump has risen.
I think it's really heartbreaking. I'm a school teacher. I haven't taught for many years, but I'm heartbroken too at the vapid sense of information that kids are being pumped. You know, it's like empty data. It's nothing really. A lot of
it's just all about selling products and making profits. We've just become this plutocracy, and
what exactly is a plutocracy, Linda?
Well, a plutocracy is a nation that is dominated by giant businesses or corporations. That they buy the government, they buy the senators, they buy the presidents. Another thing that made that even more possible was the 2010 Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court. That corporations are people and you can dump as much money into a political campaign as you want. So it makes people with a lot of money can buy candidates, and therefore they buy legislation. And so the banks, the pharmaceutical companies, and giant corporations get the legislation right through Congress that they want. And the fact that it screws the rest of us, it doesn't matter to them.
And so the lobbyists are the ones that are paying to get the change the legislation. Is that right?
Exactly. That's how. And Citizens United ruled that that is fine, that it's okay to put my see. Back in the 1990s, John McCain and the senator from Wisconsin. I can't think of this. Russ Feingold, McCain a Republican, Feingold a Democrat, drafted a piece of legislation that was called campaign finance reform, in which they wanted to severely limit the amount of money any entity could pay into a political campaign.
What year was that again?
It was called the McCain-Feingold Campaign Finance Reform Bill. And I remember getting signatures for that in the 1990s. And it eventually passed in such a watered-down form that it may well not exist at all. Give them credit. John McCain and Russ Feingold got together in a bipartisan way to draft this to try to reduce the amount of money going into politics. And
well, that makes so much sense. Oh, my gosh. It failed because of the people voting or because of the corporations voting?
Because of the corporations.
Oh, my Lord.
You know, I think it's kind of a carrot and a stick. They say to a senator or a legislator, if you do what we want, you'll be rich for the rest of your life.
Wow.
If you don't, we'll threaten your family. We'll ruin your life on some level. I think it's that bad. I think they're like national mafias in many ways. They weren't originally. I mean, and not everyone is like this. You got to understand. I'm not saying I think Elon Musk is wonderful. Warren Buffett is you know, always been above board in what he does. There are CEOs and there are companies that are that are very well aware of what's going on and trying to do the best they can to make the world a better place. So this isn't, I don't want to generalize, but I would say the vast majority in one way or another are buying their way and getting their way.
And remember at the beginning, Linda, Trump said, I can just buy my candidacy. I can buy my position.
This is the thing that gets to me about Trump, is he's right about this, but he's one of them. He has been buying legislation in New York State to favor himself for years. He said he was at Clinton's fundraisers. He's contributed. He contributed to both parties' fundraisers, and I get my way. So the very sickness at the heart of this system, he admittedly has been right in the middle of it, doing it himself.
Why can't we stop it? Hello? Well, it is kind of frustrating.
Well, I think that people are just and look, Hillary Clinton, with all of her dubious behavior, being in bed with Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, she was really in favor of the treaties. Bill Clinton was president when NAFTA it was George Bush the first that drafted NAFTA. It was under Bill Clinton that NAFTA was passed.
Okay.
Now, within NAFTA, CAFTA, and now this TPP, Trans-Pacific Agreement.
Well, Obama is going for the TPP.
Yeah, and this just...
Do you think
tragic.
They tied his legs when he came in? I know they treated him badly, but he is not what we thought he would.
Not at all. He became a bankster, very much like Hillary.
Yeah, isn't that sad?
I say this, I don't have anything personally against Obama. There are some good traits that he has, but he has gone over to the dark side with these. Lawrence Summers, he calls in Lawrence Summers, which were the big three, as I said, Greenspan, Rubin, and Summers, that deregulated Wall Street in the 1990s. And he calls him in as soon as he's elected president.
As soon as he's elected.
Right after the giant crash. And Summers now admits that he has, that they made terrible, terrible mistakes. And that in 2008, none of this was corrected. None of it was really corrected. The banks weren't really disciplined. They get, when they do illegal things, none of them go to jail. They get slap on the wrist fines. It just goes on and on that they have continued to be supported under Obama. They were certainly supported under Bush. I mean, no matter what party you were in, you were supporting these people and allowing them to do it now.
But Linda, is that the machine behind? We don't vote on the actual power in this country at all, do we?
Well, we have to look at the people that we're voting for and who's behind them and what is their track record.
Okay.
This is not easy information to attain. And frankly, this is what the problem with democracy is.
Okay.
The people are going about their business. They get up in the morning, they have to go to work. If they're lucky to have a job, they're worried about their kids going to college and paying the gas bill and everything, they don't have the time or the energy to devote to what is going on in Washington or even what's going on in their state capitals. This is the big problem with democracy, is you have to have a well-educated, informed public who's involved in what's happening. And unfortunately, this is a very, very difficult thing to do.
Just keep being aware of, first of all, somebody said to me that Obama's been threatened or he wouldn't be the way he is. Do you think that's so?
Well, I think, again, the carrot and stick analogy applies to Obama as it has to everybody else who aspired to be president or a senator or whatever, that if you go along with this, you'll be very rich and comfortable, and we'll pay for your campaigns, and we'll make sure you have a lot of great speaking engagements afterwards, and et cetera. And if you don't, we're going to see to it that you get into trouble.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah. So, and then we talk revolution, but I'm looking at evolution. That's my preference there. And I'm seeing, for example, the Dakotas, you know, the indigenous people,
yes,
fighting against that huge pipeline.
Yes.
And I'm watching, and we're not even allowed to demonstrate anymore, are we? I mean, tell me what's going on with that.
They actually called out the military to stop these thousands and thousands of demonstrators there that were not only the Native Americans about their burial grounds and historic relics and everything, but about this pipeline cutting through the Missouri River that is a major aquifer for this country. And there were environmentalists there as well as the Native Americans that led this. And now a court just decided that they weren't allowed to remain and protest. So our courts are against it, which the fundamental right in a democracy should be the right to peacefully protest.
Exactly.
And that has just been taken away from them.
Did you read the thing saying that it's funny that the pipeline would go through their land when it's not going anywhere near white suburbs or golf courses or any of those things? Is that true?
That's true.
However, isn't that sickening?
It is going through major aquifers. This is why one of the things that Obama did was he X'd out. Congress passed the XL pipeline permit.
Okay.
Both houses of Congress passed it, and Obama vetoed it.
Okay, good.
Okay, the XL pipeline is a giant tar sands, or the worst kind, coming down from Canada that was going to go right through the center of our country all the way to the Gulf of Mexico, and it could be sold to China, by the way. So, Obama now, TransCanada under NAFTA, the NAFTA agreement, TransCanada is suing the United States government and the taxpayer for not permitting them to build that pipeline. Now, this is what I mean by these treaties, these terrible so-called treaties or trade agreements.
Which one is that? Is that NAFTA?
Yes, this one is NAFTA, the North American Trade Agreement. Because what you can do under NAFTA is a corporation who wants to do something in a country, if the country itself says, no, you cannot do this, this will wreck our environment, or you, for one reason or another, you cannot do this, they can sue the country under this international tribunal. And that's what is such a horror, one of the worst things. They talk about shipping jobs overseas under these agreements, which is true, circumventing environmental laws, getting out of paying taxes. But possibly the worst aspect of these agreements, like NAFTA and like what is in the TPP, is creating a corporation which can transcend sovereign law, which is considered to be a sacred thing. They're even talking about it on Wall Street and in the Financial Channel now, like they weren't aware of this before.
Oh my gosh, really?
So you have all of this going on, that transnational corporations, most of them originated in the United States. Now,
but wait a minute, it sounds like a global kind of ruling of the whole planet.
Every every nation that signed on to these agreements are under that umbrella. And that's why the TPP, which would be for Asia, is such a disaster, and so many people are protesting.
I know, it's really scary, because it just takes, like we talked about demonstration, it takes any kind of power away from people, doesn't it?
It does. What we have, that's why I say we have a plutocracy or an oligarchy rule today, that the transnational corporations are like the royal families of yesteryear that ruled everything, controlled everything. And this is what they are doing. This is what they are being allowed to do. And it's taken about 40 years to get there.
But started 40 years ago?
I would say around 40 years ago, yeah.
Well, now I'm going to jump around just for a minute, but I'm Canadian, as you know. And one of the things, what is the part of the Constitution? It's freedom of speech, I think. Is that the first?
Yeah.
Okay, so one of the things that bothers me about that is the freedom seems to be okay if you're a corporation, but there is no freedom. You know, the kind of speech that is really destructive to people, that's freedom of speech. They're allowed to do that. There's no stoppers. I'm just so confused. I'm like, it's just a spin, isn't it?
Yes, because as you pointed out, in North Dakota, these nonviolent protesters, their right to protest was taken away, and they were dispersed by the military, and the courts upheld their disbursement.
Jeez.
The same thing, remember the Occupy Wall Street?
Yes, oh my goodness.
And I admired them so much because they said this is what they coined the term the 1%. First of all, they weren't even covered. By the way, have you seen anybody covering this on mainstream television?
No.
The North Dakota thing.
No.
Nobody's covering it. Not a camera is there. Nationally.
I know.
Nothing is there covering it. Occupy Wall Street didn't get any coverage until they finally went in there. They were persisting and camping out in the park there for so long. Finally, television went in there for one day and covered. Remember when George Bush was going to invade Iraq, which now we know was the most disastrous decision ever in modern times and is behind the entire destabilization of that region. Now, there were hundreds of thousands of protesters in New York City, in Washington, in California, in San Francisco, all over. There wasn't one in 2003 when they were out peacefully protesting. There was not one television camera on any of them except for PBS. That was it.
Wow.
Otherwise, the same thing with North Dakota. There has been nothing there. And the same thing for Occupy Wall Street. They did spend one day on it. They labeled them a bunch of hippies, dope-smoking hippies, you know, which they weren't. They were mainly intellectuals and college professors and economists.
Yeah, people who knew what was going on, right?
Well, the other thing is Mayor Bloomberg, who was there at the time, finally got rid of them because the park they were in, and this is something a lot of people don't realize, the park was privately owned.
Oh, my.
We think all these parks in New York City are for the public. That park was owned by a billionaire. And so she ordered that they leave the park. So you don't even have a public, everything has been privatized across the board.
But what's really interesting to me, talk about privatization, you know, I'm from British Columbia, and it has amazing water. And Nestle just bought it up for El Cheapo, and he's announcing that you can't have water if you haven't paid for it anyway. And he's making a fortune. Why can't that be stopped? Why can't
a Nestle
monopoly?
Is horrendous. Look what they've done. California is drying up.
I know, but he's been ripping off water, hasn't he?
Nestle is down there using their artesian wells, whatever they are, and monopolizing the water when there isn't even enough to water their crops.
I know. I mean, why? This is supposed to be a democracy. How come we can't? Occupy Wall Street's one thing. Why can't we stop a megalomaniac like that?
Yes. Well, that's a very good question. And we can only stop it if enough people know that it's happening. And
okay.
As I said, these things are not talked about on mainstream news. It's all tabloid stuff. It's all Trumpian type of garbage, reality show, high ratings.
High ratings.
Yes, with all of this infotainment, as I'm fond of calling it, so that we no longer... Look, I'm old enough to remember the Walter Cronkites and Eric...
Oh, I remember Walter Cronkite.
And these wonderful people who covered the news. I remember the civil rights movement and how well that was covered, how these courageous people went down south and covered what was going on and covered Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King wouldn't have a TV camera on him today because the TV networks are all corporations, two-thirds of them owned by Rupert Murdoch.
And I know, so the TV's all bought and paid for again.
Exactly.
It's a whole other thing.
They're corporate owned, and they reflect the views of the guys who own them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're out for ratings and entertainment. And so that there has been an abandonment of fine, except, I have to say, for PBS and NPR. You get the best news, you know, if you go there, and you get wonderful shows like Frontline, which exposes, takes these issues and talks about. Frontline did a great biography about 2 weeks ago of both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, where they came from, what their families were like. It was really comprehensive and excellent.
So how do they get away with that and don't get shut up?
Well, because PBS, PBS is supposedly not commercial, although you now see commercials all over the place. That people who donate, it's a nonprofit.
Okay.
So technically, a company will donate a large sum of money. The Koch brothers, by the way, are big supporters of PBS.
Wow.
And you see, but in turn, they weren't supposed to have ads, but they are ads now.
Hmm.
If you go to PBS, you will still see ads. In between shows. They don't break up the show, but they have them in between.
Well, I also want you to jump. I don't mean to interrupt you, except I'm worried about you not being able to teach us enough stuff before we have to be done. But what are the stars showing? Are we going to have a shakeup? Is there going to be a vibrational shift that somehow is going to knock the legs out from under some of these over the next while?
We're having it. And
goody.
The challenge is for people to somehow be able to understand what's going on, to insist on, the people themselves have to insist on good information and reporting. We can't just expect to be, that these guys are going to take care of us and then we go into a rage and burn down the town when they don't. I mean, we have to step up to the plate. But I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. Whoever wins, I think Truth Out is excellent. I think CommonDreams.org, Alternet, those are three things that I get online that I think are very outstanding. They have essays by brilliant people.
By brilliant
real
people.
Truth tellers. I think... whoever gets the presidency, and I think it is probably Hillary Clinton has the edge on this.
Mm-hmm.
She will be most likely. I'm not predicting that she will win, but I think she is the most likely to win.
Because are you telling us that there's so much disruption going on in the astrological configurations of these times?
Yes, I really feel that we have so much. We have so many challenging planets colliding with each other, symbolizing fear and anger and disruption and everything going on. But if next year, 2017, I am predicting that we're going to see one by one tsunamis in the economies of nations around the world, including our own. January, April, and then again at the end of the year between October and December, we're going to see big financial market crashes. Now, last year, in July of last year, China's stock market crashed, and it crashed again in January, which brought our market down. but the, hardly anybody even seems to be aware of this. I feel that the nation in the most trouble right now is Japan. I also feel that South Korea is in trouble.
Is Japan in trouble because of Fukushima, or is that just another issue?
Well, Fukushima, I had predicted that disaster, not specifically for Fukushima, the nuclear plant, mm-hmm. Which I didn't even realize was there at the time on the ocean front, you know. But I predicted an earthquake and a tsunami hitting that country. And I think in April of this year, there's a very real danger that their system may collapse and there may be another major tectonic, you know, their largest volcano right now has just started erupting.
Oh, wow.
And it's not even talked about on the news.
Is it near cities? Is it right by cities? Mount Fuji,
It's on one of the Japanese islands. It's their largest volcano. I'm not sure how near to a city that it's located. But I have to say that I think there's going to be a major tectonic disaster, earthquake, volcano, whatever, possible tsunami next year. And I think April is going to be a month. I also see, excuse me, the devaluation of currency.
Hmm.
And I think that the European Union is going to be on the verge of collapse. We already had Brexit. You know, nobody thought that would happen. You know, all the statistics and odds, they said, no, it's not going to happen. And it happened.
Do you think Britain's better off now?
Well, that's a very good question. Britain is going to be better or worse off deciding what they really want to do about this and what they want to do with it. But I do feel that this was a protest vote, and they immediately regretted it after it happened.
I know, it seemed funny.
You know, I think they protested for the wrong reasons. When they were interviewed on PBS, I was struck about how little they knew about what they were voting for. But at any rate, my feeling is that 2017 is a year of what I call comeuppance in the global economies. And also we're going to get hit with environmental crises and natural events. And it's really going to be whoever gets elected president will be saying, what was I thinking? Which, by the way, disturbs me the most deeply, because these people, they wouldn't be running if they knew what lay ahead, if they really understood how vulnerable the global economies are.
Let me throw this at you. What about people's health all over the world? Isn't that being threatened all the way through with the environmental things and
absolutely.
The pharma dominance?
Absolutely.
And yeah, what do you have to say about that? Do you think it's the rise of healing powers? Because that's one possibility, isn't it?
Well, this is my feeling. We have allowed corporations to determine the food we eat, the water we drink. We've allowed things to be deregulated so that the commons no longer is fixing its infrastructure, has clean water, and the EPA, the FDA, these people are no longer inspecting the food anymore. I mean, again, privatization, corporate rule says, don't bother me, don't inspect me. The whole GMO thing with their spraying things with Roundup and insecticides that are threatening the bees and the butterflies and the pollinators and who knows what else. All of these people are allowed to do whatever they want to make big profits at the expense of human life and all other life on this planet. And we are going to have to come to terms with this. And it's a tall order, because it means creating a new economic and governmental paradigm. And we're going to suffer the consequences of not doing it are lying ahead for us. The biggest between 2017 and 2020 are going to be the worst part of this, I call it a global depression that we've been in for so many people. And what are we going to rise to this occasion? I think we can. I think one of the big things that may save us is nuclear fusion and also the development of a perfect battery. These two things could revolutionize energy technology and mean that we would no longer need oil and gas and coal, et cetera, et cetera. Donald Trump says that global climate change is bunk, and that he's going to beef up all the all these companies. And Hillary isn't that much better with what she said.
Oh, what she said? I don't know if I want to talk about her too much right now.
Yeah, last night. I mean, that she was going to make sure that the oil and gas companies were okay, and that something could go for the coal miners, and on and on. She was very. At least she says she's for environmental cleanup and sustainable energy and investment in that. But there's no way that solar and windmill can substitute the way it is now for oil and gas. There's just no way.
Really?
It doesn't add up with the amount of energy that we need. It can help a little bit on local levels. But what there has to be a major form of energy production, and it is nuclear fusion. And I think in the 2020s, we're going to have it, and we're going to develop an infrastructure for it. And I think in that period, we will likely end the age of fossil fuels. That's it. But then we're going to have to figure out how to clean up what we have done to the atmosphere and environment of this planet.
Because somebody was telling me that the biggest problem is going to be our soil because we have not consciously farmed,
right.
and we've destroyed the soil.
We've depleted it.
Yeah, he said you have no idea how difficult that's going to be for people, for the whole world.
The problems we have developed are monumental in nature, and it's going to require a monumental consciousness shift. We are going to have to open our minds and our hearts to the greater understanding and love and force in this universe, which is waiting for us to open to it, in my estimation. And we may come up with big, big solutions to problems. There are so many brilliant people out there. And it's fascinating when you study history to realize some little guy over here with a Bunsen burner may have changed the nature of medicine or energy or whatever. It can be done. We could have breakthroughs.
Mm-hmm. Or Elon Musk doing a colonizing in Mars.
Yeah, right. I would stop worrying about that altogether.
Okay.
I think that we need to tackle this precious globe that we call Earth with its unique set of circumstances that have spawned the magnificence of life. And they're calling this the anthropogenic age now, that the Holocene era has officially ended, and we're in the anthropogenic era of mass extinction.
Oh, my.
The humans have set us on a course for the extinction of life. We have to reverse this, and we're going to have a shift or change, and I think it can happen.
Well, I hope you're right, because I heard there are 5,000 or more oils being drilled down at the Gulf where the big petroleum company hasn't finished paying off all the incredible damaging fines down there for the big spill.
Right.
I'm like, that's terrifying.
There's also a brand new oil find in Alaska, which means there'll be another gigantic Alaskan pipe. They said there's enough oil there to keep us going for the next 50 years.
Oh, no.
And, of course, people are saying, this is great. We don't have to depend on the Middle East anymore. But like Hillary said last night, oil pricing depends on the stability of these Middle East countries with shipping oil elsewhere to other nations. So the price of oil is often decided outside of our realm. But the point is drilling for more oil, drilling and creating, it ensures the demise of the climate as we know it.
Mm-hmm. And the whole planet, actually.
Yes. That humans are taking most life on this planet down with us. mm-hmm. including our own. And people, it seems as if so many people just can't understand how profound this is. I read articles by oceanographers and meteorologists and international scientists that are measuring all of these things, the melting at the poles, the rising of the oceans, the dramatic shifts in weather, and everything. And they frankly are not at all optimistic about our future.
Well, you know, here's another thing. This is a small sidebar. It's a big sidebar, actually. But I read some material that seemed to have come through the Hillary Clinton emails or whatever a while back, and also saw a post on Facebook from an ex-military guy saying that America went in and literally destabilized country after country in the Middle East, and they were out of the seven they were going to do, they were at five. And I cried, Linda. I read that and I went, oh my gosh, you know, we don't realize what our country is doing. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I have written about this in both of my books. It's been going on for a long, long time. We have been interfering and setting up governments that will work with us and do what we want them to do for many, many years, since the late 1940s.
Wow, but even recently, in South America as well, right?
Exactly. And again, so it's what is South America? Minerals, oil, all of these things, so that we can command these commodities, basically. Mm-hmm. We can control and command them. And the when George Bush invaded Iraq, that was one of the worst decisions, one of the worst. And now Iraq is just a complete blown-up mess. And, of course, Hillary was and Barack Obama were behind getting rid of Gaddafi in Libya. And what did they do? I mean, Trump is right about that.
Mm-hmm.
What did they do? Libya is now a bunch of terrorists fighting each other. It's mm-hmm. in a civil war. And it just goes on and on. And with Assad and Syria, we're somewhere in the quagmire with this, because mm-hmm. Russia has sided with Assad. And now Russia is bombing all the protesters that we sided with. But who are the protesters? Who are the guys in Syria that started the civil war? Some of them are ISIS. Some of them are Al-Qaeda. There's a whole bunch of different ethnic groups. And there isn't any, it's so complex.
But I think we have to realize we're also responsible for some of it, don't you think?
We are. There's no question that we are responsible for a great deal of this, of these collapses and these. But the big thing that nobody talks about in the Middle East is that their climate is collapsing. The Tigris, Euphrates, and Nile rivers are drying up. Temperatures are soaring to 127 degrees in the summertime there. They are unable to raise their food, water their crops, so they're forced to import food, which is very, very costly, and the people can't afford it. So there's all this climate thing that you and I have been discussing that is also behind a lot of the revolutions in the Middle East. And these monarchies are and the people who are in control there frequently are just so corrupt. And Saudi Arabia is one of them, and we've been allies of theirs because of they've been the major producer worldwide of oil. So we've gotten in bed with these people and supported people who are terrible to their people. And this just endlessly goes on and on as to our, quote, interests.
Well, tell me this, and I know we have to draw this to a close. I want everybody to read soothsayer.com, which is your monthly newsletter, because it's very pithy. And the one I just read was really powerful. But I would like you to kind of define a little bit of what we can do.
Well, I think that we can, first of all, know if we're going to vote for somebody, you have to decide what the lesser of the evils is. And then you have to keep track of with what's going on. The website, newsletters, and essays that you mentioned online are good places to go. PBS News is good to follow. You've got to keep track of what is doing, keep track of what they're doing.
What about the Washington Post? Because Bezos just bought that, eh?
Yeah. Well, I just feel the Washington Post is also not what it was, you know, for many years, and neither is the New York Times.
But you're saying that our ignorance has let it slide this badly, right?
Yes. I really feel that the lack of involvement, that we get really mad, our jobs have left, these people have betrayed us and everything, but we've got to make a valid attempt to know what's going on to the best of our ability.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I think humanity needs to devote itself to creating the energy from nuclear fusion, which is the holy grail. There's no pollution. It's hydrogen fusion. Hydrogen is the most plentiful element in the universe. They've already got fusion reactions in three different sites. There's MIT solved the problem of electrical conductivity, and Northrop Grumman created a portable fusion chamber. And
so they're working on it, right?
They are working on it, but our government isn't subsidizing this. The government is subsidizing the oil companies and the gas companies.
But that's because they're being paid off to do that.
Exactly.
I have to say goodbye, Linda, to tell people what to read.
So I think that really great leaps have to be made, but I think we've got the intelligence and the ability to make these leaps, but we've got to have the guts and the willingness and the commitment to do so.
And the community consciousness, the ability to work together.
Yes, I think at our local community level, we can focus on locally sourced organic food, as we do in the city I live in, which is Ithaca, New York, to know what's going on locally and do our best to keep local economies going in a healthy way, to have the notion of worker-owned enterprises.
Wow.
Is again, that's considered a socialist idea. Well, it isn't at all. It's private enterprise, but it's
for us all. But it's for us all. Linda, this has just been absolutely enlivening and informative, and people can get hold of you at soothsayer.com,
S-O-O-T-H-E. Yes, with an E in the middle, S-O-O-T-H-E-S-A-Y-E-R.
And I sure hope you'll come back on in a while, because
it's been a pleasure, Veronica. It's always great to be on your show.
And it's wonderful to speak with you, Linda Sherman. Thank you.